The people I encounter from Watermark have a real heart for Christ and knowing Christ within them, but also to be able to share fellowship in Christ with one another. And I am really impressed to see how many of you are dedicating your lives to lead community. I believe that what you are doing in community will have a greater impact on this city in the future than all the sermons preached across the city any given Sunday. And hopefully by the end of tonight, you'll understand why. I thought it would be helpful tonight, hopefully it will be helpful, to lay out a map for creating community so that when you're leading a group, that you can have a sense of where is my community group in terms of developing the stages of development from infancy to a mature group where tremendous growth and change takes place. There are a lot of people who are now entering community who have grown up in a culture of individualism. And unfortunately, what we're finding is that the culture of individualism has led to isolationism. And in isolationism, what happens is that people don't learn the social skills of empathy and regard and mutuality and reciprocity and all those things that make for tremendous community. And it's interesting, if you look back at Robert Putnam's work from Harvard University, he wrote the book Bowling Alone in 2000, and then after that, Better Together. And he raised the alarm that our social fabric is deteriorating, and everyone wants to know why. And what they're concluding is that community has deteriorated. It used to be in the 1950s and 60s that membership in community groups, secular community groups, it was burgeoning membership. Many, many, many people joining community. And the thought was, is that by the time the baby boomers would get to today, that we would have this huge number of people impacting our culture for good. And what they're finding is that instead, membership has dropped more than 50% in these community groups. And so the civic need is faltering. And what they're finding is that one of the few places where membership numbers are increasing or have increased, and that's in the church. One of the things that concerns me is what kind of church? Because what they're finding is what's led to the deterioration of belonging in a community, and we'll get to why that's so important in a minute, is the focus on self. If we take a look back 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, the focus was on belonging, as on social grouping. And what happens when you belong to a social group is when, let's say, us four guys were serving together in Kiwanis, let's say, and there is a sense of shared identity and purpose. And in that shared identity and purpose, we develop relationships where we learn to trust one another. And as we trust one another, there's a sense of reciprocity that I'm willing to lay down my life for you and give to you. For instance, Mike, I'll give to you because I'm expecting at some point Sam or somebody else, maybe Scott, somebody else is going to reciprocate. And so what happens with that, the trustworthiness and the reciprocity that develops in community, that extends everywhere I go. Because when I go into the city and I encounter somebody with need, I have a network that's developed, a community network with all these guys who are networked with multiple people. And so maybe I can't do it, but Mike knows people who can do it. And so it's through that community all of a sudden there's this huge impact that's taking place in society. What's happened is the reverse. All of a sudden we're looking at low levels of trust out in community. People are very guarded. They become isolated. And there's a whole lot of negative effects in society that follow. So Watermark is one of the few places that I know that talks about community all the time. And it's interesting that we almost can sort of habituate to community. It's like, okay, community, community. Yeah, I'm hearing it over and over and over again. And really miss the value and an understanding of how what you're doing now is going to impact the city in the future. So that's why I'm here tonight, is to share my passion for how can we develop mature communities to get groups of people, members of the body of Christ, who are very diverse in their functions and very gifted in their functions, to serve together to impact the world around us. I'm a little lengthy in my introduction, but I think about John 13. By this shall all men know you're my disciples by how you love one another. And I believe that the world is really, really hungry to find a place to belong again. And they're going to know Watermark's a place to belong. But unfortunately, what's going to come through the doors is we're going to have people unskilled in being members of community. And they may bring maybe self-centeredness, lack of empathy, the things that can derail you and really frustrate your efforts in leading your group of people to a deep place of intimacy and openness and reciprocity. So I'm hoping we can talk about that. So to start with, I would love to convert this into a community group experience tonight. And I'd love just some participation. What are some things that really frustrate you in group that just makes you helpless sometimes? Maybe just sort of the flesh gets stirred up and you feel really angry. Or maybe fear. You aren't quite sure what to do. Can you? Maybe your community groups are peaceful and calm and loving and always filled with the Spirit. Yes?
Commitment.
Commitment? I'm going to use a bigger Sharpie here. So openness. Okay. How about some other things? I'm going to put commitment down because that's something different. I tried to prime the pump and have a few things up here like the monopolizer. You just can't shut him up. You know, he just likes to talk, talk, talk. I said he, not she. The silent member, she sits there and she's afraid to open her mouth and is very guarded. And boy, you sit there and you know, what's she thinking? And everybody's like projecting their thoughts of she must be judging all of us, but maybe something else is going on, but we just don't know. So how about some other things? Pride. And how does that show up? Maybe some behaviors. The one who has to win. So maybe the winner, maybe we can put the competitor. I'm just going to abbreviate. Let's see, what else? That's a really good one. Thank you, because we're gonna touch on that tonight. Yes?
How about the fixer.
Am I doing this right? Yeah, here it is. The fixer. All right? Anybody else? These are good. These are really good. So what happens when the fixer's like kicking into gear? What happens for you and as you're trying to lead a group? What happens to the group? What happens to you as the fixer kicks into his or her? And we'll talk some more about the fixer, because a lot of times it's someone who's feeling so out of control and so anxious, and so that might be going on, but also people who in that uncertainty need to have a sense of certainty, and they go into a one-up position and almost a parental position. I'm going to tell you what your problem is and show you how to fix it. This is a really good list to get started, and as we go along, feel free to introduce whatever thoughts you might have. Well, let's turn this into a community group. Sort of a big task with so many people. So let's start with, this is going to be a community conversation here. We're meeting for the first time, and we want to really get everyone engaged because, you know, coming to community is a vulnerable thing. Now, for some of you in CR, man, you're used to just opening up your heart and putting it out there and sharing the deep things, but then there's other people like me and, you know, it's a whole new thing to walk through the doors, and I'm scared to death, and I have shame issues underneath, and I don't know what you're going to think if I reveal any of those things. And when you go deep, it makes me feel like I have to go deep, and I'm too scared to go deep. So we're gonna talk about some of this. So, but to start with, I want to know what gives you a passion. What do you believe about community? What are the positive things you believe in your heart about community that gets you up in the morning and gets you excited about leading your group? What are things that you believe about the value of community? Let me put it that way.
Life change.
How many in here believe about life change? Hands? Wow, look at that. There's commonality amongst all of you. There's life change that happens in group. That's amazing to see those hands go up. What else? Accountability. How many of you really see community as a place where accountability is valued and life-changing. Do you all notice that? All the hands that go up around the room? Yes. What you had a thought over here.
I am encouraged daily by the fact that the same Spirit working in me is working in my brothers.
That's awesome. How many value that? Your hands go up. So what are you feeling right now as we're starting this first evening in terms of our new community group? And there's this shared commonality in terms of our perspectives. What stirs in you?
Hope.
All right. So we have hope. Actually, I shouldn't use a Sharpie on that board, should I? They'd come after me. So, hope, what else? And orange doesn't quite work for me. I need black, but I don't have black, so let's say hope. Okay, what else? Yeah, maybe openness starts to show up. Starts to increase. What else?
Anticipation or excitement.
And that excitement, it stirs from somewhere. What is it like to know that there's so many people similar to yourself?
It's just super encouraging because if you look at the world, the news, and everything else, it's kind of like, oh gosh, but then you look at society and see what's running. It's like, the Lord placed people in your life that they know what's going on and they're there for you and you have to get them.
Okay. That's wonderful. So are we starting to feel a sense of belonging? A sense of we're in this together, a sense of commonality amongst us. It's one of the things to start our life, our growth map, is what we would call engagement. And I'm going to put out some proposals for you tonight to think about. They're ideas for you to think about, to pray about, and let the Lord direct you. He may direct you different because you're wired different than me, maybe different member of the body, you have a different perspective, and that's fine. But engagement, when we start our group, we really need to find a way to orient people to what community our community group's going to be about. And I think a wonderful way to do that is to get people to talk about their expectations and to invite people to voice, what do you want this place to be? And as one person voices their view, you don't sit there silent as a leader. What you do is you say, and I bet many people in here have the same thing, have the same hope. And when you do that and other people raise their hand, suddenly something happens. There's a sense of engagement. It's a sense of what we would call universality. And universality is about I'm similar to others. And instantly what this does is it helps to break isolation, especially for people who are walking in off the streets and they want to belong and they don't quite know how to belong. What I did there a minute ago was just really trying to encourage the beginnings of our group tonight that's going to last for 5 years. We're just encouraging a sense of commonality. And if we take a look at 1 Corinthians 1:10, it talks about being like-minded, having been one, being unified. There's an initial unity that we have. Now here's the thing. There's a lot of differences in our perspective that we haven't encountered yet. Those are coming. But we want to start someplace where people can have a sense that others are similar to themselves. I may be continuing to beat the drum on this a little bit too much. But what happens is there's a sense of hope that comes out of that. The sense of openness that comes out of it. A sense of excitement that comes out of that. Somebody else formulated the title for tonight. And I'm not going to reveal my position one way or the other on the title, that there's no I in community. But I would like to hear some of you talk about how many of you agree with that title and why. Let's talk about that. I'm sure somebody in here agrees with there's no I in community.
Just like there's no I in team. Everyone in the community is focusing towards the common goal.
No I in team. Everybody in the community focused on the common goal. And I bet there's people in here who would align themselves with that position, right? Heads are nodding. Okay. How many of you would disagree with there's no I in team, in community? I'd like to hear what you have to say.
for the community, part of making community great is the unique people that are a part of that.
Okay. How many people would agree with, what's your name?
Ben.
What Ben is saying. I might use, like, what Sam's saying over there just because I can't read your name. What Ben is saying. How many of you would agree with that? All right. Ooh, we start to have some differences. All right. So, what happens when differences start to show up in your group? Differences of opinion. And you feel those tensions. But no one's saying anything about those tensions when differences are starting to show up. You know, we have this great bonding and there are these assumptions that we're similar, and that's the key. We're assuming that we're all alike. And then maybe a little grenade gets thrown in there, or a thought gets expressed, or something gets said, and all of a sudden, it's like the group's polarized. All right? You feel the tensions a little bit? All right? And then what happens? What do you do as a leader? Do you, like, how do you cope with that? Run? What's that? Pray about it is good. What else? Cancel the community. Okay, what else? All right, so we're going from commonality, what's common, to what's different. And what's interesting is what's different. This is what trips people up, because what happens is that there are some tensions. Right? It's never happened in your group. Can hardly see you. Tensions, right? The tensions, what happens with tensions? The group comes to sometimes can polarize. Actually, you get the monopolizer over here, and he goes off, and you really are starting to hear his position, and you get the winner over there too. Somebody has to win, and then someone goes into the submissive position and maybe silent. They retreat because they want to maintain cohesion and harmony, so they go into the lose position, right? And what do we tend to do? Don't we want to scramble back to this because it feels so good? Right? But we don't want to be weenies, right? We're going to get to that. Does this make sense? That we're doing really great and someone just has to run the whole... Well, guess what? The First Corinthians church did the same thing. 1 Corinthians 1:10, he's talking about unity and being united. And then the second chapter, they're all squabbling over, I'm a Paul and I'm Apollos and I'm a Christ. And Paul's saying, is Christ divided? No! But what happens is that it's pretty quick in the process that we start to see some of these things show up. And a lot of times we don't know how to deal with it. Right? Maybe not. Maybe so. What we tend to do in our American culture is, especially in our Dallas culture, we go back to being nice. You know, don't rock the boat. Don't make anybody mad. Let's get back to a place of peace. And what happens is we end up with pseudo-intimacy. I'm going to say something parenthetically. I want those of you who have a heart for marriage that you believe God ultimately wants you to be with a spouse, I want you to be considering a premarital and marriage pathway, because this maps beautifully onto that. And that's what so many couples do. I see couples 15 and 20 years in the marriage who do this dance. And they end up with such false intimacy with each other. And they can't work through the tensions because the husband gets all bent out of shape and fired up. And the wife goes into being sweet and kind and nice, and nothing wrong with that, especially if the Spirit's guiding that. But we get stuck in this cycle, and maybe real relationship really starts somewhere in here. So just a freebie to throw out there. So what do we do here? Yes.
Conflict resolution.
Amen, sister. Preach it.
Yeah, we've got the whole thing from Todd. We're taking step by step.
All right. So what's the step?
A
lot of steps.
No, but seriously, it's when you don't want to deal with it, you've got to deal with it. You know, if somebody's dressing inappropriately, as an example, and she's your friend, you got to be able to take her lovingly, walk beside her, and say, hey, I don't really think this is appropriate. Even though it's ugly and it doesn't feel good, I mean, it could be anything, you know what I'm saying? But that's that conflict resolution, and it happens in the group, and you've got to be able to.
Okay, so there's two things we're going to look at here, and that's going to be the prize winner, and we're going to get to that point too. But point one is the task of this stage, By the way, the task here is to have a sense of commitment to the group, that there's a sense of similarity. I'm not too different than everybody else, so I can really drop my guard, and it's the beginning of belonging. And the task over here is to recognize that differences exist. If we go to 1 Corinthians 12, which I love 1 Corinthians 12 and 13, if you put those two together, all aren't the eye, for where would the hearing be? And all aren't the ear, for where would the smelling be? Right? So it's a matter of perception. And what I like to do early on, by the way, once we get this all laid out, you can orient your group to the whole thing. And in some ways it will help accelerate your group, because they'll have a template. Say, okay, yeah, we're sort of in that stage, and that's okay. We're going to get to where we need to go. But one of the things I love to do with my community group, and I have a wonderful community group there in Knoxville, is early on I had an airline pilot. And sometimes airline pilots are a little bit, you know, they tend to be right, and I want them to be right. You know, I want them to be vigilant and be a little bit sort of paranoid about things that could be going wrong. And we got crosswise in group. He heard me say something about grace. I come from a very abusive religious background that was all about performance and not about the life of Christ and the Spirit of Christ. I didn't learn that until my 20s, which changed my life forever. And he came from a church that was very permissive, and the guy that had having an affair was still allowed to teach Sunday school class. And so when he hears me say grace, he's not hearing, you know, obedience. And when I hear obedience, the alarm bells go off. Like, what do you mean by that? Because, you know. And so it's like, oh, wait a minute. Wait. You are the eye, and you're going to see things that I can't see because I'm an ear. And if I'm an ear, I may hear things that you don't hear because you're an eye. And what happened is there's a passage of Scripture that just like leapt off the page to me. And I'm going to scramble in my notes. I have no idea where I am, and I want to find that, because it's Colossians 2. And I'll just share it. Paul is entreating us that we would be perfectly united in heart and in love, so that we can collectively, together, share the complete riches, full riches of complete understanding of the mystery of Christ, in whom are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And I think what he's saying is that if you want a full understanding of the mystery of Christ, that will probably happen more in community than in isolation. Because in community, as the Spirit of God is working and revealing Himself, and truth comes from, you know, maybe a different angle and perspective, the treasures of wisdom and knowledge that were previously hidden from me as I was in isolation, when I'm united in love with my brothers and sisters, and the ear is speaking, and the eye is speaking, and the nose is smelling, and it's like, whoa, I never saw that before. And so one of the things we can do when the group starts to polarize and get in that win-lose is say, now, wait a minute. It may be that we have different perspectives because we have different roles in this body, different roles in this community group, and maybe different spiritual giftings. If we go look at Romans 12, starting with verse 3, we're not to think of ourselves more highly than we should, right? And we're to have humility because He's put us all in the body with different giftings. And so what happens, you can orient your group that these differences are normal, not abnormal. And it could really start to relieve some of the tension. But my sister out here in the audience had something really important to say, that until you get the norm for your group, this is how we're going to resolve conflict, it's very difficult to move forward. So number one, recognize differences exist. Again, I like using 1 Corinthians 12. I like using Romans 12. But also the conflict resolution. One of the things that's important is we find a way to make something simple for our people. And one of the simplest ways I've found is to take them to 2 Corinthians 10:5, that how we have to take captive every thought to make them obedient to Christ. Because when we started to when there started to be differences between, okay, there's no I in community, some people are saying, yes, that's right, we have to be others focused, and some people are saying, wait a minute, there's diversity in the body. There's such a superficial understanding of each other that we don't really know what the other person means. And so our thoughts are going to be filling in the blanks about what we think the other person means. And it's not what the person says that upsets us, it's how we interpret what the person says. Right? And the weaning principle is really out of Scott Stanley's research at the University of Denver. And what does he say? Is you have to slow things down. I like to throw the yellow card sometimes. Literally, I have a green chip, a yellow chip, and a red chip. It's something that I like. It's like, hey, let's slow this down. Because I'm starting to experience tensions, and these tensions are opportunities to discover something. And so we're going to slow this down. And you've just said something, and I'm here. I'm feeling tensions from this other side of the room. And you just said something, and I don't want to miss what's embedded in what you're saying. So you say it again, and then we're going to reflect what we think you mean, how we're interpreting what you mean, to make sure that we honor you and esteem you highly, that we aren't misinterpreting you. We're going to take captive our thoughts. We're going to have humility of mind. We're going to consider that person as better than ourselves. Philippians 2 talks about that. It's all in that. Right? Because what happens with the weaning principle is conflict starts and you... Some people retreat, avoid into silence. We don't want to do that. Other people go into that one-up posture and validation. We don't want to do that. And then there's this filtering, this negative interpretation that's embedded. And this one little tool really helps to accomplish all those things, to prevent the weenie issues from happening. Is okay, it's not what they're saying that's stirring up the group, it's how we're interpreting what the person says. And then what I like to do is just educate people that, you know, sometimes our thoughts, we take things too personally, we engage in mind reading, we jump to conclusions, sometimes we overgeneralize, there you go again. And those are all thinking errors, and those are really from our sin nature that come up where we end up judging a brother or sister. And let's be in a place of mercy and grace and really, let's give every group member the benefit of the doubt. Just because I feel upset with them doesn't mean I'm interpreting them accurately. That does wonders for moving forward. That's going to be our standard, our norm. That's what we're going to do from here on out. Once you get this conflict resolution norm down, all those tensions that, you know, at the beginning of the stage, they're palpable, but we don't really talk about them, we avoid them, and then there's that irritation starts to lurk, and then it just sometimes... Anybody have a group blow up? No? Yes. That's part of what's going on. And some people, see, one of the things we want to keep in mind, the people coming into our fellowship, into our communities that were raised in isolation instead of community, what happens with emotionally disengaged families? You put some tension in there and everyone scatters to their corner of the house. They're very conflictual. So the moment they feel tension, it's a signal to either go into combative posture, aggressive posture, or to withdraw. And it's programmed in the limbic system, the midbrain. They just, and what happens is like a post-traumatic stress response. I experience tension in this new family system, and all of a sudden it's like I'm experiencing family all over again. And guess what? Those patterns that were rehearsed over and over and over again from thousands of encounters with my original family members get automatically played out. And as group leaders, we want to make sure that we don't personalize those things. Because you could get really upset. It's like, I'm doing my best to provide true spiritual community and lead us to a place of unity, and you are just sort of messing with the whole process. Right? And so what happens is that when we lovingly say to them, help me understand how you're interpreting me, and you hear the response back and you realize their filters are really distorted, and you pair that with the hot response they had or the avoidant response, it's like, okay, here's a person who is going to greatly benefit from the redemptive experience of my community group. I was one of those guys. I was one that came from a family like that, and you know what? I stayed on the periphery of community. And to learn to be in community where differences could be tolerated and to be loved and embraced, and that there was value in differences of opinion and differences in perspective, it changed my life. And it helped me find my way into the body of Christ and to be, you know, more expressive and clearly defined. And I just want to share that with all of you, that this is a mark. This can be life-changing. Because if people retreat, oftentimes when people retreat by leaving the group, then that's going to cause fear, and the whole group is like, what was it about us that was, you know, is there something toxic in me that I drove the person out of the group? Or it can take you to a place where you just, you know, you have a sweet time of fellowship, but there's really not the deep meat that can happen. Once this norm is in place, now we're into something really interesting, and this is probably what some of you can identify with who have done some phenomenal work on CR. Once we recognize these differences exist and that's normal, we enter what's called individuation. And what happens here is that I'm experiencing, it's the experience of self in the presence of others. What happens oftentimes once that tension goes away is people's guards drop and they start, just stuff starts coming out. Have you ever experienced that? And sometimes when that stuff starts coming out, it's like, oh, they're discovering something about themselves at the same time you're all observing it. You know? And that's scary. Especially for those of us who had to mask and be ideal and, you know, but the private life, the things that, those unintegrated parts of us that we sort of are in denial and we sort of, the fragments that we sort of, the things you're integrated in CR, there's a lot of people who don't do that. They aren't integrating those pieces of their life. And so what happens when their guard drops is like, oh, I'm being exposed. And I think there's something powerful to really watch for that vulnerability of exposure and just express gratitude that we're so grateful that you have the courage to reveal. It looks like you've revealed this and now you're uncomfortable. Maybe is my perception correct? And how many else in the room have ever experienced that? And what you can do is you can take some of the things you've learned over here and make it a more universal experience. How many of you, do all of you know about Johari's window? It's a nice little, no? Johari's window is interesting. If this is me, and there are the things I know about me, and there are the things I don't know about me, and this is you, right? And here are the things that you know about me, and here are the things that you don't know about me. What's interesting is that there are things I know about me that's shared. You know this, and I know it, so it's shared information. There's really not a whole lot of vulnerability for the most part about that. But then there are things about me that you know that I don't know because I'm blind to it. There are things about me that I know that you don't know and that's hidden from you. And then there are things that I have not yet discovered and you don't know about me yet and it's undiscovered. And sometimes this little device is helpful to share with people that just, we want to, again, throughout this, we want to normalize. These, what we're talking about is a progressive stages that build one on the next. And, you know, working with the city of Knoxville and working with different agencies and putting people together on design teams is that we go through the same process, trying to become a living group, a living system with a common purpose and shared goal. And it's so interesting just finding a way to, if we can accelerate a group past the stage and normalize those things and then get over here, then we can really get to some innovative work. And I believe the same thing can happen here. This is really, really helpful. Does this make sense? Anybody have questions about this? Because what happens is there are things about me I don't know that you're going to reflect and hopefully you're going to speak the truth in love with much mercy. Romans 2 verse 4, the kindness of God leads men to repent. You say it with mercy and with kindness. If God would mark any of our iniquities, who of us would stand? There's forgiveness with him that he would be feared. There are things, and this is this vulnerable shame piece, is that if you really knew who I was, you probably wouldn't think so highly of me. I'm going to erase this. So what happens in this individuation stage is it's like something to discover self in the presence of others is such a phenomenal experience if we can get past this. Because what happens is I'm sitting in a group of 20, maybe 10 people, 12 people who are all mirrors and they reflect back what they see. And I start to see myself. And hopefully, as I start to see myself and experience grace, someone's going to reach out, a stronger member to a weaker member, and say, oh, but this is why he died for you, and this is why he loves you, and this is what resurrection life's about. It's not about you, it's about him. You've been crucified with him. No longer I, but Christ who lives in me, Christ who lives in you. And it's just, it can awaken hope that while the exposure of self generates anxiety and shame, the response, the mirroring response can just... It's part of discipleship is really reach out and connect with them in the presence. Does this make sense so far? And what happens is, one of the tasks is to recognize our complexity. I love just incorporating, and from a discipleship perspective, that we're called to walk in the Spirit, but oftentimes we walk in the flesh. And there are these complex parts of ourselves, and we have to reconcile that in our relationship with Christ and with one another. So once we understand that there's more depth to the differences, there's more complexity, what happens, that introspection you realize, I'm revealing myself in the presence of these people and they still care about me, they still love me. And all of a sudden what emerges is a sense of intimacy. And what I mean by intimacy, it's experiencing connection and discovering that I am relevant. I have purpose, meaning I'm important. I'm important to others. If we take a look at 1 Corinthians 12, one member doesn't say to another, I have no need of you. And the stronger members, what do we do to the immodest parts? We show them more modesty, if I can hearken back to the King James Version. There's this sense that although I am so broken, I'm so included. And I'm capable of closeness. Now, I tell you, at the beginning of this stage, have you ever seen where suddenly people pair up and they sort of go off and do things and they're best buds and they go to games and they're going to here and going there and other members of the group sort of are left on the sidelines? Did that ever happen? And you realize that can really stir up some anxieties for the other members in the group? I don't know if that ever happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's normal for that to happen right here. Because what happens is all of a sudden they're in touch with needs that many people that they've been out of touch with. It's like, oh, I need attention. I need intimacy. I need affection. I need your time. And at the beginning of the stage, they can look really self-centered, really egocentric at the very beginning of this. I was talking to someone earlier today. I have some buddies here on staff, and we were having coffee earlier. And he runs a life group, or he leads a community group. And there's this amazing couple in their group that several other couples gravitate towards for counseling and encouragement, but it leaves other couples on the sideline. And so they have this subgroup that's going on and wonderful things are happening, but it's leading to, they've gotten to this intimacy stage, but it's leading to this almost like a polarization of the group and starting to create tensions. And I was just so thankful to hear his response. What he shared was, you know, we're missing out on the blessing of being in community together. And I'm not saying don't seek this very mature couple out, but if you do, would you bring that experience back into the room? Let us share it with you. I think that's real important to do. What happens over here is we have, at first, we're going to probably see some selfishness. I'm using that term very cautiously. People who have unmet emotional needs in their life, who, you know, God-given needs for attention, affection, approval, appreciation, encouragement, support, comfort, respect, et cetera, et cetera. Oftentimes, I mean, God's designed those needs to be consistently met by our parents and nourished. And what happens when we're not nourished, we tend to go into a place of hurt and pain, and then children convert into shame. Maybe there's something wrong with me, that's why I'm not getting my needs met. And then we sort of cap it off. It's like, I'm just going to be independent, and I'm not going to need anybody. And you develop a sense and a starting awareness of, I need somebody. And then those lids come off and this hunger is right there. And so we want to find a way to reframe what we're looking at. I use the word selfish, but maybe it's this unmet emotional need that's suddenly coming to life. And suddenly, maybe they come across as the monopolizer and you just want to shake them up and say, there's other people in the room. But what happens as you journey across this is you get to a point where there is a dawning that I am responsible to others. And so there's a sense of not just belonging to others, but responsible. to others. And that ushers in this next phase. And we're going to call this next phase mutuality. And with mutuality, this is where we finally get to agape community. And well, agape could be going along all the way through here, of course. But the love one another's, all the wonderful love one another's verses. No greater love has someone than this. You lay down your life for your friend. And there, what happens here is it's marked with a lot of reciprocity. And it's not bartering, I'll do this for you if you do this for me. It's just a willingness to sacrificially give. I want to give myself. I want to serve you. I want to, because I know somewhere in this life group, because we're so interconnected with one another, and we're so deeply trusting and deeply connected and committed to one another, that my needs are going to get met too. So I don't have to worry about generously giving out of my heart, because I know my needs are going to get met too. And it just is such an incredible place to be, where out of intimacy comes a sense of responsibility. It's responsible closeness. Over here might be irresponsible closeness. I want to be close to you and take all I can get. But over here is more of responsible closeness. You know, I have in my notes, and I want to find it, there's a passage I love in Philippians 2. And I'll just try to share it from heart. And there are elements of this that I can probably remember, but let each of you consider the interest and needs of the other person as more important than your own, with humility of mind. And let this attitude be in you that was also in Christ Jesus. John 15, we're to love the way He loved us. And we get to experience that. And when you get to experience agape love that says, I can sacrificially, generously give my heart and soul. And it's not about me. And that's the thing we're going to want to touch on in a minute. It's all about Him doing His work. It's not about me focusing on the fruit end of the branch. It's John 15, I'm just a hollow branch. Without Him, I could do nothing. I'm focused on the abiding end of the branch. It's all about Him and His life flowing through me, His love that impacts the other person. That's what we want to be about when we're to this point of mutuality. Does that make sense so far? And what's nice about these stages is you have a sense of where our group is. You know, the person who's excessively introspective, so much so that he can't get outside of himself, you know, instead of beating him up over the head, maybe there's some things he's learning about himself that he really needs to stay in a place of introspection, because there are these fragments of his life. He didn't benefit from CR. There are fragments of his life that are coming up that he's really struggling with. How do I reconcile that I can be this and this at the same time? And so, you know, instead of saying, well, you're just being so self-focused and you're consuming the air of the group, as it were, maybe there's a time to maybe reflect. It seems like this has been a time, a season in our community where you've really needed to take some time and just be. And be with yourself in the presence of people. And how has this been? What are you learning about yourself? You can approach it with such grace. What are you learning about yourself? What is God revealing to you? And, you know, it's another question. In some ways, you know, you've shared some things about your family. In some ways, how are we becoming a replacement family for you? You know, we don't want to repeat patterns that left you empty and hurt. But how are we doing with that? And it's what happens to you that you can then start asking some questions that draw His attention to how, you know, we really are in realizing that you're learning a lot in our presence, but how is it for you to be in relationship with us at the same time while you do this? I'm experiencing myself in the presence, but am I experiencing myself relationally? It's very different. I can experience myself while all these great people are mirroring me and reflecting me and supporting me, but am I experiencing myself in relationship with others? Am I experiencing the interpersonal? Am I learning? That's a whole different dimension of learning that takes place here. So we can find a way to, you know, pause and encourage some feedback about what they're learning. Are there pieces of their life that are coming together? Are they getting what they need from the group? And then maybe lead them into, what's it like for you to be in our community and be interpersonal with us? Because the focus shifts Suddenly it's no longer on the self, it's on the us. But it's an us where you start to be aware of this emerging responsibility to have reciprocity and to sometimes you receive, sometimes you give. We need one more whiteboard. And it's a stage that some of you probably will experience with your group, and that's the termination stage of your community. A lot of times we don't know how to say goodbye. A lot of us have broken relationships where people wander off and we're left hurt. And if at the end of a group, a life group, your life group, your community group starts to drift apart and sort of pull the plug on it, you run the risk of undoing so much. You want to celebrate the community that you shared, but you also want to invite everyone to give feedback on what has this process been like for you. That is so important. Because you get to go back and all there may be lurking in people, there may be lurking these sort of broken relationship components while in community that they just never spoke about and they just sort of let it go. It gives them a chance to come back and say, you know, when we were first starting the group, you said something to me that really hurt and I've been too afraid to speak. But I know I can trust you now, and I realize that I've been avoiding and I don't want to be a weenie. I want to bring this out. And then you get a chance to talk it through, and all these fragments from the group get to be re-experienced and reintegrated, and there's a sense of cohesion, there's a sense of we really have reconciled with one another. All those little, you know, little pebble in your shoe, how it sort of catches your attention and distracts you. Sometimes people leave group with a little pebble in their shoe. And it's like, hey, let's get the pebble out of your shoe. And let's make sure that the rubble's clean off the road and we're able to just leave and go forward. Because then what they internalize is the power of that group experience. And it's gonna educate them when they go into marriage, when they have children, when they stay in this church. I'm telling you, the discipleship is not just spiritual discipleship here. And I believe psychological transformation, emotional transformation is spiritual. But you're re-imprinting people's capacity to belong. And it's in that belonging that the Spirit of God is going to do His work. By this shall all men know you're my disciples, by how you love one another. And it's in that belonging that the world that is so starved to belong, but they don't know where to go, they're going to see something's different about those people. And I want to go. I want to belong. And it's one of that's the billboard of the gospel, is seeing the love of Christ on display. And what did Jesus say in John 17? He said to His Father, as He's praying, He said, you know, the world doesn't know you. But when they see you and me and me and them, as it were, pardon me for mistranslating you, or messing up your words. I mean, if you read that passage, the world's going to know by what they see happening between us. And it's Jesus happening between us. And that's what Jesus was praying. The world doesn't know you, Father, but they're going to know you because of what's going on in community of your believers. And that's why I believe that what's happening at Watermark is going to have an impact on this city for years to come. Because what you take into the city, when you go to work as an individual, you're bringing a room full of people with you. You may not think that. When I do family therapy and someone's sitting there, or individual therapy, all the other family members are in the room whether they're present or not. The influence is going to be there. And so what happens is as you go to work or you go down serving the soup kitchen or you have a chance to minister and not just bond here but then take that and bridge it out into the community, you're going to take what's embedded in your heart and soul from your community relationships. You know people who know people who know people that can minister if a need arises. Hey, you know, I have a buddy who's really good at this. I'm not good, but he is, and I know that he'd be thrilled to help you right now. And that's how this all sort of spills over into the community. So, one last thing I'm going to read, I just feel prompted to. There are a number of experts in our culture right now who are really alarmed at what's happening in our culture. And back in 1989, there was a gentleman named Skinner who was addressing the Institute of Marital Studies in London. And he was ringing the bell about the postmodern culture and individualism. And I want to just quote what he says. There's an increasing concern at the effect on marriage and family of the progressive breakdown in the structure of society. In the Western world, over the past 40 years, our values have increasingly become individual rather than group-centered, swinging the balance away from social cohesion toward personal freedom, often regardless of its social consequences. We have been losing the concept of duty, role, place in society, of authority and order, including the former influential role of father, the extended family, and the community. There has been a decline in the influence of religion and in the force of social expectations and in respect for the law. And again, I just share all of that because I want to just magnify the sense that when you all learn to be in community and share a community identity, and you learn the trust that emerges out of that and the reciprocity that spills out of that, that's going to directly impact all of this. As Christ is alive in you, not just in you individually, but in your community group, it will spill over and affect all of these issues. If we want social change, it's going to happen through community to restore what's being broken and lost. So it's really good to be here tonight. I have no idea the time. Any questions? We can turn this into all kinds of... Yeah. Hi there, Mo.
If you terminate a group...
Yes.
You know, can you go back and... As you were talking about that, I was just thinking about a group that terminated and wanted to go back and celebrating and also getting feedback. Is it ever too late to go do that?
I don't think it's too late to do that. The question was, let's say you've already terminated your group. We've talked here about giving yourself weeks in advance, you know, a month or two or three, as long as you need to really celebrate what you've gone through, work through any remaining thorns or pebbles and get all that cleaned up. But let's say after the fact, it's like, you know what, we didn't do that very well. I'd send out an email or an invitation saying, let's have an anniversary. And you know what, in this anniversary, I would love to open up an opportunity for us to rejoice with each other and mourn with each other and talk about the great things we experienced and talk about some of the painful things we experienced as a result of being together. And there are community groups here where a lot of pains happen. And I don't think it's never too late to go back and say, let's just sit down, and it's not to rehash who did what and get into this polarized piece here, but let's find a way to try to connect the dots and tighten the weave and re-express love for one another and remind each other why we're a part of the body of Christ. I think it's a great idea for you to do that. So, anybody else? Yes.
In the last stage, maturity.
Yeah. Mutuality.
Mutuality.
Yes.
I can't remember. You said a really something really positive occurs in that stage, that you move beyond experiencing yourself in group and you experience it in relationship.
You move beyond. There is when you. At the end of the intimacy phase, there is an awareness of self in relationship to others. You realize you have a capacity for closeness, and you realize that you have relevance and meaning to somebody else. It's very powerful to discover that. But at the end of stage four, there's a dawning that, you know what, there is responsibility in me for all the other members of my group because we are interconnected. What I do is going to affect everybody in this group, whether they know about it or not. You know, the mobile hanging over the baby's crib, you pull one and everything goes out of whack. That's what happens. And I really think that can be part of accountability in a really positive way. One of the ways you might think about this is, and I refer back to James 3, you know, the wisdom from below and the wisdom from above. And there's envy and strife and all this stuff that goes on with the wisdom from below. And then there's it's gentle and peace-loving and merciful and easy to be entreated. Without partiality, without hypocrisy, is the wisdom from above. Is why don't you try something and encourage all of your group members and say, you know, we have an amazing opportunity to experience Christ in our midst in ways we never could one-on-one. And so why don't you all take some time this week before we get together and pray, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, know my thoughts. See if there be any wicked way in me. And if He reveals something to you, which, by the way, He will, If you confess your sin, He's faithful and just to forgive you of your sin, cleanse you from all unrighteousness. Let's come cleansed, walking in the Spirit, so He can, in an unhindered way, flow through all of us. Because it's not just about, okay, we're going to go solve problems in our group with one another. What's your opinion? What's my opinion? It is the holiest of holies that we come together in the body of Christ. We get the amazing opportunity to experience interconnectedness in the body working together. That's what stage 5 is about. It's a responsibility. I am responsible. And how I walk with Christ, not just between He and I, but I know if I'm in the flesh and I come into my community group in the flesh, it's going to affect everybody. But if I walk in the Spirit and stay in step with the Spirit and He's flowing through me and He's alive in me and He's alive in you, the hose is unkinked and He's building us together to become a habitation in which He dwells by His Spirit, that flow's taking place, phenomenal things could happen. I think we need to orient people to that. Be the hollow branch. Abide in the vine. Don't focus on the fruit. Focus on Him. Let Him perform His life through you. Ephesians 3:20. He will do exceedingly abundantly above anything you ask or imagine according to His power at work in you. It's no longer you, but Christ. Prepare yourself and then come and see what happens. So I'm passionate about that. Somebody else had their hand up. Yes? You know, somebody asked me that a couple hours ago. We were having a great coffee talk over this. And it's interesting that you're going to have some people who are like racehorses who, again, I refer to Celebrate Recovery, great opportunities to really integrate so many pieces of their life and surrender to Christ and the Lord taking that brokenness. But then there are others who have not had that experience. And I think that's a lot of it is the strong bearing with the weak. You might have a group that you can literally guide through this very quickly. And that's the intent, is to, in some ways, realize one stage builds on the next. In the 1965, someone came out with first you form, and then you storm, and then you norm, and then you perform. Well, this is a more detailed version of that. That's epigenetic. One stage builds on the next, or the next stage builds on the previous stage. And so, I think sometimes some groups are going to be slow in the process. We really have to be kind and gentle. I also think, in fact, we're talking about it. There's a bunch of us that, when I come to town, we have a great time on Thursday afternoons, and we're talking about how can we, in some ways, like take 1 Corinthians and use that as the pattern to really let people know there's a normal process that even the Word reveals in the Word. Because, you know, there's a sense of unity in 1 Corinthians 1:10, and then you get to the 2nd and 3rd chapter with all this conflict, and then he says in the 11th chapter, okay, differences have to abound. I mean, they will abound, and so that those who are approved would be made known. And then you get to 1 Corinthians 12 about, okay, hey, we're all members of the body of Christ, and we all have a different function, a different role, and then, but the greatest of these is love. How can we love one another? And then mutuality at the end, 1 Corinthians 14, he talks about, don't just desire a spiritual gift that builds yourself up. You desire a gift that builds the other people up. And so how can we, in some ways, just get this in print so we can have it to sit with, and maybe you all could be a part of a think tank to refine this and come back and say, how's this working? And again, the Holy Spirit can blow all this out of the water. This is, you know, a guideline that works well in many different contexts. It works great in marital counseling, premarital counseling. How can we get a couple from this where we're very similar to each other to what do we do when these tensions start to arise? How can we get to a point where we really give each other the benefit of the doubt so we can get to a place of deeper understanding of each other and respect for one another so we can really learn how to be genuinely intimate? So I went on a tangent there. I apologize. Yes?
I lead a group of just about 6 guys, single. Are we in a mature group?
I don't know, but it's something to think about, to go back to your group and say, let's really start to explore where the differences lie between all of us. Because all of us can't be the eye. It says that in 1 Corinthians 12. Where would the smelling be? So maybe there's a chance we can explore this, that maybe a deeper spiritual intimacy is robbed because we're so used to just hanging together and being in a great place. It's always a possibility. Are there differences that we aren't talking about that we could explore where we can more deeply understand each other and maybe more deeply understand our unique roles in the body of Christ? That's a thought. Let's see where that goes. So, yes, over here.
I just wanted to ask two real quick ones. The tough issues board here. How can you tackle a couple of ways to handle some of those tough issues? And the second piece of that is just, is there such thing as a repeat offender when dealing with tough issues?
Oh my. There are individuals who it can be very deeply ingrained because of their brokenness, that it's almost like they can't focus on others. It's almost like they never learned how to have empathy, to really put themselves in the other person's experience and feel and resonate and respond in a way that shows an understanding of the other. And ironically, what happens is those people are pretty empty on the inside and fragmented. And so you put someone, the monopolizer, let's talk about that guy, and the silent person, oftentimes the monopolizer, you put them in a group setting where when we're talking about commonalities, how are we all alike? That may feel like he's being engulfed and swallowed up because he has to be unique and different. And so he has to keep talking to make sure he's visible, because just the process of commonality is enough to engulf him and make him feel like he's suddenly losing himself. And so talking is a way of being connected. And one of the things, it's interesting, you have a talker who's dominant, you also probably are going to have a silent person who's almost passive, and people are afraid to speak up because you don't know what's going to happen. I like to say the monopolizer is, you know, you've had so much to share with us, and I'm imagining that there are other people who are resonating with you. And I take a shot in the dark on that, because I may know that the rest of the group is frustrated with this guy. But it may be that some other people in the group also want to share something that would be in line with what you're saying. So I really want to give us an opportunity. I still look for the similarity, even in all of that. And would you be willing to hear what other people might have to say in terms of how they identify with you? And there may be a little bit of silence. I won't let that go on too long. And the next thing I would say, and the other thing I'd say to the monopolizer, and the other thing is you may have said some really great things that maybe have triggered some other ideas. I'm reframing a little bit. You might have said a lot of things that triggered some, and maybe, how many of you, maybe there are other things you want to share, and then the next person shares something, and then I go after it. It's like, oh, let's... I bet there are other people who are agreeing with Joe. Now, Jim, you've shared, and that's great, and it's triggered some things for Joe. Now, Joe is talking. Who else in here? And then I get back to the universal peace with Joe. The silent person is a tough one, because sometimes there's a lot of shame lurking, and they don't want to speak up. They're afraid of how you're going to judge them if they put their voice out there. I like to reframe that with the Proverbs, where the wise man keeps his thoughts to himself. I don't use the fool when he's kept his mouth shut, it's not to be a wise man, because open your mouth and prove yourself to be a fool. But you can use the proverb, a wise man keeps his thoughts to himself, and just say, you have been sitting, and I'm imagining there's a lot of wisdom in there, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And I'm imagining that there are things that you could say that would really resonate with what others have shared. And is there anything you'd like to share now? And it's just that extra encouragement that's couched with a passage that can really help draw them out. Because sometimes they're so afraid that I'm going to be too unique, too toxic. You're going to discover that, and then I'm going to have to leave the group. So we talked a little bit about the monopolizer and the silent person. I think the openness piece, and we've talked a little bit about that. There are different ways of looking at that. If you think about dating, if you go on your first date, you aren't going to just unzip everything and go to a very intimate place. And you tend to go, one of the things that's helpful, sometimes doing some skills training with folks who don't have experience in relationship, is oftentimes they'll share very deep, very quick, and it's not because they want to be intimate with you, is they want to know right up front, are you going to reject me? Before I invest in you, I'm going to pour it all out there so you see all the negative things. And what I try to do with these people is just to say, look, we have these zones, and again, some of you may disagree with that, and if we're going to get from stage 2 to stage 3 for our next meeting, disagree with me, that'd be great. Private information. And there's intimate information. There's best friend information. There's close friend. There's casual friend or casual acquaintance. And there's stranger. One of the things that is interesting is that if we're meeting each other, we want to get from here to here, because if you cross too many boundaries at one time, bells start going off, warning, you know, TMI, too much information. It's just worth putting out there to really think about, and not to be shaming of any of us, because there are times that I share very deep, very personal, as the Spirit prompts me, and maybe sometimes in my flesh, I hope not. But, I mean, there will be times if God works in mysterious ways, and if He wants you to share deeply from your heart, you don't use this to stop it. But all I'm saying is that sometimes people need to be invited to just linger in a stage and get acquainted, and then cross the next boundary and get more acquainted, and then cross the next boundary and get more acquainted. Because there are stages of warming up and growing a relationship. And in some ways, that's why leading a group, I tend to sort of redirect it to more superficial issues in the early meetings, so that it doesn't go too quickly to those very deep private, you know, personal and private information. Because in some ways, our relationship hasn't developed to the point where I can trust you with my heart. And the wise man is cautious with his friendships, is what King Solomon said. There's a cautiousness. And I think there are some people who need to be encouraged to guard their heart until it's the right time. That's just an opinion. Go ahead. Private is, you know, some things that you maybe have, I'm never going to share that with anyone. And you end up sharing it with maybe your spouse or maybe one or two people in your accountability group. But you keep it there. You know, blessed is a man whose sin is covered, whose sin the Lord remembers no more. You know, there's certain elements of life where you've confessed your sin. You have very trustworthy people who are journeying with you in life, and you share it, and that's private. It's not things you would put more generally out in front of people. Oh, anybody else? Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
So, if we're able to kind of recognize components of all the different stages, and we see in a community group signs of like complacency or some kind of stagnation, are there any issues that are common to leading to stagnation?
This is a marvelous question. It has to do with complacency and stagnation. And generally, if you're in complacency or stagnation, something hasn't matured in your group. And it's very likely that some of the cohesion that you have is really about this than it is about this or somewhere in here. And I think you can just raise that and say, I noticed that we've in some ways maybe plateaued or maybe we aren't going deeper. And I would like to... Does anybody else... In some ways you almost have to go back and to comment out. Does anybody else share the same perspective? So what happens, let me throw in a couple other things. In some ways, when you add a new person to the group, the group might be somewhere down here, and it's going to tilt the whole group, and you in some ways have to go back and bring the group this way. Does that make sense? You add a new person to the group? Some of you are understanding that. Or maybe it's something else that's funny. I just missed it. But sometimes maybe a difficult issue has come up that's maybe a bombshell or a grenade, and it's sort of tilted the group. One of the things that I like about having this conflict resolution piece is that in some ways... Oops, that was a permanent marker. It's recorded, but it's not videotaped. That's great. So what happens is we could be down here, and then something happens, and what we do is we can go back to you versus me. What was your view? What was my view? Let's work this through, and then accelerate back to here. But what happens, because we have this conflict resolution norm in place, we don't go back to pseudo-intimacy, which is over here. So the Weenie principle, what are we doing as a church body in terms of norming the whole church body to do this is marvelous, because... Hopefully, if we have any setbacks, we go to here instead of back to there. Yes?
And how would you go about handling maybe someone who does have a really rough past and has come a really long way and they're working on it, but kind of seems to hold on to that victim mentality a little bit? And like, no matter what you do to reaffirm that this person is loved and appreciated and that their struggles are just on the same level as everybody else, that... Sometimes if you do tend to speak truth, that person is so fragile that it continues to feel like you're breaking them every time you do. So to find that balance between truth and love with someone who really is tender and...
Yeah, and we have a two-hour session after this. We're going to address just that. That's a really big issue. One of the things that it's, I think it's really helpful to come back to is, in some ways as a group leader, you end up oftentimes wearing a parent's face or someone who's really harmed them before. And if we take a look at, borrow from post-traumatic stress, the post-traumatic stress model, and I want to just touch on that, is oftentimes people have been injured and wounded in attachment. It's not the bully on the playground. You can recover from that, but it's mother or father or sibling or family member. And when they step into our community, what happens is it becomes family. And what happens is all that stuff can lie dormant under the concrete until you step into family, and then things start getting triggered. And what happens is all that trauma memory is stored up in the midbrain. The midbrain is what's called the limbic system, and there's a little gland or a little member of that that's called the amygdala that's constantly scanning for danger. And the moment danger is detected, sends up adrenaline, and what happens is their thinking goes from rational to very irrational, and they sort of lock and load in almost a paranoid way that you're just trying to hurt me, you know? And it's like, what happened to all my love that I've invested in you? Well, in that moment, that adrenaline just, all of a sudden, they can't think logically. And there's some phenomenal research happening at USC and also at Biola Rosemary School of Psychology on this, because what they're finding is that, again, those attachment patterns and all that stuff that's imprinted is going to get reawakened in the group. And we want to find a way to, hopefully, some of that threat will dissipate. A couple of things I want to say. People don't realize that when the sensation kicks in, the sensation of threat, like 1 to 102 seconds, that sensation of threat is followed by interpretation. Their brain, the neocortex, then starts to attach dangerous meaning. Like, she is the enemy right now. But the limbic system does not have a timeline. The danger that happened in the past gets played out because something, and you might have a tone in your voice or a look on your face and just a little sliver that sounds critical, and it's not dangerous at all. But their brain goes into hypervigilance mode. And what we want to do is, that's why we come back to this conflict resolution piece. It's not what I do that upsets you, it's how you interpret what I do. Because if we can help people, when sensation of threat is here, recognize, wait a minute, just because the sensation is there doesn't mean the thoughts going through your head are accurate. It's in the disparity that healing starts to take place, and it starts to degrade that threat response. And that's why intimate community can be so powerful for people who have been so badly injured. I'm going to recap by saying, when someone steps into your community group with those kind of core injuries, you know, it's going to get played out in your community group. You can just expect it. And you might say, help me understand whose face I'm wearing, who I reminded you of, and, you know, I don't want to be your dad. I really want you to have the freedom to say, this is how I'm perceiving you right now. Is this what you mean? Is this what you perceive? I mean, this is how I'm perceiving you. Is this what you mean? And you ask that person, please give me the benefit of the doubt. Just because you interpret me in a negative, just please try to give me the benefit of the doubt, and let's work this through. So, I hope some of that helps. Yes?
If I may, I'd like to follow up with this gentleman's question to my right. Follow-up question. Well, I'll just be specific. Our group seems stagnant. That's why he was asking. So it makes it easier for everybody.
Hopefully it's not all of you guys, right?
No, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. If we're dealing with stagnation and complacency, what I heard you say was that probably one of the other stages didn't get addressed adequately, probably the different stage. So my question is, it seems then, because relationships are organic and they don't go by these stages,
right.
These stages are ways that we understand what's going on
right.
Underneath. So is it then like, if I'm understanding what you've been teaching, that you can get all the way to maturity and be functioning in a very mature community, but if conflict comes up or a difference arises that doesn't get addressed, then that can revert you all the way back to the beginning and you can kind of work through a community back all the way through these cycles multiple times
okay.
Over and over.
Now you nailed something. If you encounter some kind of difference.